Welcome to the Philharmonic Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:02 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is January 29th. Of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. And this really has been an eventful week right across a large number of assets. This was another week in which the dollar firmed considerably and closed out the week at the upper side of the week's range, with the dollar index in the region of 79.5. This has also been a week in which we saw funding currencies for potential carry trades all firming right across the boards, really, with the yen and the pound also comparatively strong against some of what had been classed as strong currencies over the last few months, such as those in Asia and in commodity producing Latin America. This was also a week on the currency front, where we saw, for example, that the Latin American dollar index completed what appears to be a medium-term top. It really would have to rally in a rather emphatic way from current levels. It's currently testing its 200-day moving average to offset scope for some further downside here. This was because you have this dollar strength. The commodity sector is being hit probably a little bit harder, and you have the gold market has been ranging in the region of this $1,080 level for most of the week. It's been as low as the 1070s, but closing out the week in the region of 1,080. Platinum is closing out the week in the region of $1,500. For silver, that's $16, and for palladium, it's above $400. For the industrial metals, they've also pulled back rather violently, and the copper market, having been up there in the region of $3.50 at the beginning, or in the last couple of weeks, closed out the week closer to $3. And these are large downward dynamics right across the metals sector, both precious and industrial. And they're the largest downward dynamics we've seen in a number of months. They stand out on the charts. That would be, I think, a handy definition of what a dynamic is. And they need to be countermanded if the medium-term uptrends are going to be reasserted. In the meantime, we have this corrective phase. In stock markets, this week was also characterized by weak action right across the boards, with the Dow Jones finishing out the week in the region of 10,000. The S&P is closing out the week under 1,100, and the Nasdaq is also down. I think this is the third week in a row. The oil market is also worthy of mention because it was up as high as almost $75 today, but closed out the week in the region of 72, and the progression of higher lows is in the region of 69. So it's already pulled back in the region of $13 from its highs in this sort of ranging uptrend, and we're into an area of prior support. And if it is going to sustain this ranging uptrend, then it will start to rally in the relatively near future if this decline persists at the same rate. Elsewhere in the commodity markets, you continue to see that the grain markets have been relatively weak, and we continue to see that those grains are falling back towards the lower sides of their year-long ranges. Elsewhere in the soft commodity sector, sugar was considerably stronger in here today. It's getting right back up to that 30-cent level for the US dollar contract, and it remains relatively consistent, although it has gone up an awful long way already. So it is really worth watching for any loss of consistency, because that really would be a worry. But for the moment, it remains consistent, and we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. With the orange juice market, it pulled back rather sharply in here today, but would need to take out the most recent low to question the consistency of that particular uptrend. So we do have spots of strength in the commodity sector that are directly linked to weather-related events rather than the rest of the commodity sector, which is more influenced by, on the one hand, the strength of the dollar and the general unwinding of some of the trades that have been put on since March of last year. With the equity markets, the Wall Street leash effect would suggest that with the Dow and the S&P and the Nasdaq all pulling back rather sharply, and we have a number of failed upside breaks, and we're seeing some of these markets beginning to threaten their progression of higher reaction lows. And for the S&P, if it breaks below the 1,000 point level, and that's still in the region of 10% from here, then we really will be in a larger reactionary or corrective phase that is likely to be relatively lengthy. But for other markets that have perhaps been ranging for a little bit longer, we're coming back into the area of the 200-day moving average, and we're coming back. This, by definition, in an uptrend, this would be somewhere we would be seeing, or somewhere in the region that we'd be seeing support being found. So the next couple of weeks are going to be key as to whether this powerful advance over the last few months has, well, over the last year for some of those leading markets, and a little bit longer indeed, is to be maintained. Monetary conditions remain extraordinarily accommodative, and that hasn't changed. If we get a larger shakeout from here, it's likely to be a mean reversion led by the Wall Street indices, and then that would translate into a somewhat larger pullback for some high beta markets, primarily in Asia and in Latin America. Brazil is an interesting case because this week the real broke down against the dollar. It had broken out last, or the dollar broke out last week, but it extended that breakout in here this week, and that suggests that not only have the Brazilian government succeeded in checking the advance of the real, but they've succeeded in weakening their currency. So their plan is working. But from the point of view of someone monitoring the consistency of the Brazilian stock market, it remains above the 65,000 level, having dipped below it earlier this week. And that still means that the trend is relatively consistent, and it really would need to take out the 60,000 point level to question the consistency of the overall medium-term uptrend. And if we got a slightly deeper reaction in the region of the prior highs, that wouldn't be unexpected. But because we've had this tax on inflows introduced, which has succeeded in weakening the currency, the question remains as to who is going to be the person to get right back in there now and start buying the market and pushing it back up to new high ground. People would have been quite happy to pay the premium as long as the trend remained consistent and we had a benevolent type of sentiment for the global stock market generally, but that has changed now into a more anxious environment, and the likelihood that we are in a medium-term correction has increased quite considerably. The other reason for believing that is because while from largely from July through to about October, we had an inverse correlation between some of the funding currencies and some of the better performing stock markets. When the dollar was getting weaker, we had strength right across the commodity market, or indeed risk assets generally, because it extended into the corporate bond market and into some of those emerging market stock markets. But that inverse correlation began to break down from late October, so that now we have the dollar having posted a higher low, and it's also now posting higher highs, and looks set to continue to advance, particularly against some of those weaker currencies such as the euro. And that is not supportive of stock markets in the same way that it was, that its weakness was. So the inverse correlation is broken down. People who were opening carry trades are now under pressure. Anyone who has an implied short in the US dollar is now under pressure, and that extends into the commodity markets and particularly into the precious metal markets. Gold's secular bull market remains intact, but as long as we have this strengthening US dollar and unwinding of risk generally, then the chances are that precious metals and gold in particular are going to remain under pressure. And gold has actually held up relatively well this week when we compare it to how the industrial metals have pulled back so sharply. And that is something I think that is cold comfort for those of us who are sitting on a little bit of a loss from our rolled positions. But I'm willing to sit with it for a while longer because I think there is a good chance that we're going to see gold regaining its allure over the in the short to medium term. Looking at it somewhat bigger picture, gold remains in this secular bull market. It's succeeded in breaking outwards from the most recent of 3 18-month consolidations, and I think a lot of people will be looking at the $1,000 level for that, provided it finds support anywhere above or in the region of that area. They're going to continue to give the upside the benefit of the doubt. There is also the possibility that we're seeing people really quite keen to buy gold at a somewhat lower level, and there are have been some notable people talking about gold being in a bubble. Well, gold isn't, we don't have anything approaching gold fever at the moment. So it's a bit of a misnomer to refer to gold as a bubble type market, unless one wanted to talk it down with a view to getting in on the action at a somewhat lower level. And provided it finds support anywhere in the region or above the $1,000 level, we can continue to give the medium-term upside the benefit of the doubt, but in the short term there is a risk that we're going to see it fall that little bit lower. And with gold pulling back, that also that risk of a further pullback is extended into the other precious metals. This was also an important week from the point of governance, because we continue to see that. I suppose in Fuller Money, we have said repeatedly for a number of years that governance is everything in markets, but that's especially true of our long-term investments. And where do we want to put our money for the long term, with a view that we'll be able to go back and get it when we want to realize our investment? And this has been an important week because, on the one hand, you have Greece getting into trouble, and the yield on the 10-year Greek bond getting up to 7%, and the spread over bunds getting out to levels not seen since 1998. And this is all down to the fact that the economy has been mismanaged, that corruption is endemic, that bribery is commonplace. So that is one area where we see that economic, civil, corporate governance, fiscal governance has really broken down, and the country is suffering the consequences. We also saw that this week the Supreme Court in the US gave a green light to lobby groups to basically pay for influence. And that's a very worrying development from the point of view of governance, because what does that say about the political system that the judiciary are giving a green light for corporations to pay for influence? And while this system has existed for a long time, it's now essentially been rubber stamped by the highest judicial power in the country. And for a country that stands out as being the beacon for freedom and democracy in the world. This is a worrying development. And that is something that it really does need to be looked at rather closely. On the other hand, when we look at countries in the emerging world, we have to ask, is governance improving or deteriorating? And you look at a country like Brazil, which in 10 years has gone from having being a massive, one of the largest debtor countries to being an international creditor, where they have made inroads and very successfully into getting inflation under control. They are improving right across the spectrum in terms of their economic and fiscal governance. And that is also true of countries such as China. China still has a very long way to go to approach the freedoms that we take for granted in the West. But you can say categorically that the standards of governance, particularly at the corporate level, have improved considerably in the last decade in China. You could say the same thing about India, and you can say the same thing about a large number of emerging markets. So for one group of countries that are potential, that we can potentially invest in, we see that governance is improving. And in another, we see a marked deterioration in the standards of governance. And that is a trend that needs to be reversed in a hurry, that we as citizens need to look at in a very serious way, because that deterioration is hazardous to our wealth and potentially our health. And from the perspective of a long-term investor and posing as the judge at an international beauty contest, we're looking for the markets that are showing improvement. And that is almost exclusively today in the emerging world, and most particularly in emerging Asia and commodity-producing Latin America. We are currently in a corrective phase. It is not over. But we also know that we're being presented with the next good potential buying opportunity for some of these markets. We'll know what it looks like when it presents itself. What we'll be looking for that will tell us that the current corrective phase is over is that we'll see upward dynamics, and not just in one market, but we'll see a large number of upward dynamics right across a whole range of markets. We'll also see the dollar, the yen, or the pound weakening, and weakening in a meaningful way. So they will break their current uptrends, and stock markets will rally in a meaningful way, and we'll see upward dynamics right across the board. If we begin to see that markets are finding support in the region of their 200-day moving averages and then rallying from somewhere there, all the better. But what we're looking for are upward dynamics. We're looking for clear signs that demand is returning in a meaningful way, that shorts are being put under pressure, because what we've seen over the last 3 weeks in particular has been that leveraged investors have been put under pressure by the strengthening of the dollar, which has been the favored carry trade funding currency. We've also seen that long-only investors have begun to take profits. We've seen failed upside breaks, which is an indication that there is ample supply above the market. We're beginning to see that progressions of higher lows are being challenged and in some cases breaking. That's an all-in indication that investors generally are deleveraging. What we're looking for, once this deleveraging process has run its course, will be that demand is returning, and that will be the clearest indication that that is occurring will be upward dynamics. And on a commonality basis, if we're coming into an important low, then we should see that right across markets in upward dynamics occurring not just in one market, in a large number of markets on the same day or within 2 days of each other. And if we do see that, then there's a good chance that the market will have found a low. We do not have evidence that that has happened just yet. Markets continue to pull further back. Some of them are a little bit oversold in the short term, but we do need to see an emphatic reversal at the moment. And until we see that, we can continue to say that this is a corrective phase and these markets can fall that bit lower from here. Government bonds are likely to have hit their all-time low yields in 2008, with the US 10-year down at 10%. And that has been an incredible bull market. Government bond prices pretty much went up for almost 30 years. But in any other market, if something had been going up for that amount of time and supply was about to explode, then anyone looking at it would say that that was an important top. And that's what we have today in government bonds. But because we continue to have deflationary pressures that are real in the global economy, and particularly in the economies of the USA and Europe and indeed Japan, there is the continued argument that government bond prices will stay higher for longer. But the simple fact is that you cannot continue to expand your supply and have governments support the market by buying their own paper in quantitative easing. Quantitative easing will end sooner or later, and the marginal buyer for government bonds will have to come from somewhere else other than central banks. And when we do, and there is a strong likelihood that that is unlikely to occur, in which case we could see government bond yields pushing up higher than many expect. We don't see that right now, and particularly in the current medium-term correction, there is potential for government bond prices to advance for the simple reason that they provide an element of security for those who are seeking to protect their profits and looking for a safe haven. But that is something of a counterintuitive strengthening of the US Treasury market, or indeed any other sovereign market, and indeed for the US dollar. Because these are congenitally weak asset markets, and they're only strengthening when we get a pullback and consolidation in some of the risk assets. But that short-term or potentially medium-term strengthening of the dollar, or indeed for sovereign bonds, is likely to only be a short to medium-term strengthening rather than the secular bull markets that we have in commodities, or the vast majority of commodities in commodity-producing Latin America and emerging Asia, where we have the greatest urbanization in history going on and a massive expansion in infrastructure and industrial capacity and billions of new middle-class consumers entering the global economy as both consumers and competitors for jobs and consumption of commodities generally. And that is the big story that is going to drive these markets for decades to come. And the most important thing for long-term investors is to get the macro call right. And the greatest urbanization in history is the big macro call for the coming decade, and indeed subsequent to that, and is likely to drive investment returns over the long term for a considerable period of time. And when we see that governance is also improving in the countries that are driving that secular theme, that's all the better for longer term investors. In the short to medium term, they're worth watching because we're likely to see Some we're likely to see them pull back a bit further, and that's likely to provide us with the next significant buying opportunity because monetary conditions remain extraordinarily accommodative, which would suggest that we are not at the same kind of big market peak that we were at back in 2007 and 2008, but rather we're at a point like a medium-term correction, and this could be compared to what we saw back in 2004, where 2003 had seen an impressive rally following the big Nasdaq bust, and the market spent the vast majority of 2004 going pretty much holding on to most of its gains, but going pretty much nowhere. And so far in 2010, that template appears to be playing out rather similarly. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening and wish all the best to all of you.